Hi everyone, thank you for coming. You will have seen our statement obviously that came out at 2:30. I have to say the board had a very productive discussion over the last 2 days. Overall, the information since the August meeting has not materially altered the outlook, the key judgments or the risks that the board sees. We've seen the June quarter national accounts, two sets of labour force figures and one monthly CPI indicator. We've also reviewed developments overseas. And through our liaison program, we've continued to talk to businesses and community groups about the conditions they're facing right now and their outlook for the future. We've considered in detail whether our current settings are sufficiently restrictive and judged that based on what we know at the moment, rates will remain on hold for the time being. Inflation has come down a long way since it peaked in 2022, both in Australia and overseas. Part of this was the resolution of supply chain issues and energy prices easing, and monetary policy has also been doing its job. But inflation is still above our target, and it's proving to be sticky. Progress in getting underlying inflation down has slowed, and it's likely to have remained slow in the September quarter. We judge that the level of demand is still above the economy's ability to supply goods and services, but that gap is closing. The labour market is still easing, but it remains relatively tight, and we saw again last week solid growth in jobs. I know some people are worried about a faster deterioration in the jobs market, so we are keeping a close eye on this. But based on the most recent data, employment continues to grow and the rate of layoffs remains very low. And while forward indicators have eased, some, such as jobs vacancies, have remained elevated. And we're still hearing stories from our liaison that the availability of labour remains a bit of a constraint on some businesses. Wages growth has passed its peak, but it remains high relative to productivity growth, which has been weak for some time. Weak productivity growth weighs on growth in the economy's supply capacity. So compared to a scenario where productivity growth was stronger, weak productivity growth means it takes longer for the gap between demand and supply to close, and therefore longer for inflation to turn to target. Although goods inflation has returned around about normal, services inflation remains elevated. Housing prices continue to grow strongly because of the imbalance between strong demand and lack of new housing supply, but the pace of growth in advertised rents has slowed a bit. GDP growth is very subdued at 0.2% in the June quarter. That was in line with our August statement. Private domestic demand declined in the quarter, driven by weaker than expected household consumption. June quarter national accounts and other recent data suggest a slightly softer outlook for the economic activity in the near term than what we were expecting in August, although there have been some early signs of a pickup in spending based on bank transaction data for August, but that's very preliminary. Overall, the weaker than expected momentum over the first half of the year and the mixed picture from recent indicators suggests there's some risk that consumption growth could remain subdued for a little longer than we previously anticipated. So what does this all mean? Well, the recent data, I think you'd agree, have been a little mixed, but overall they reinforce the need to maintain a restrictive monetary policy stance and remain vigilant to the upside risks to inflation. The board needs to be confident that inflation is moving sustainably towards the target before any decisions are made about a reduction in interest rates. So we really need to see progress on underlying inflation coming back down toward the target. So thank you, and I'm happy to take your questions.
Governor Peter Ryan from the ABC. You said you're remaining resolute and vigilant about getting inflation back into the band. You've also said you're not ruling anything in or anything out. So did you consider an interest rate increase, and was there any debate or discussion about cutting interest rates?
Thanks, Peter. So we didn't explicitly consider an interest rate rise at this meeting. The format of the meeting was slightly different. The way we framed the discussion really was around what had changed since August and what would we need to see to go either a raise in interest rates or a lowering in interest rates. So there wasn't an explicit alternative in the sense that I've talked about in the past.
Governor John Rolfe from The Telegraph. Former Treasurer Wayne Swan recently said, quote, "I think the Reserve Bank is putting economic dogma over rational economic decision making," and he said, "The government is doing a lot to bring down inflation, but the Reserve Bank is simply punching itself in the face. It's counterproductive and it's not good economic policy." What do you say to that?
I'll stay out of the politics of it, John. My only comment would be that what we are doing is what we think is best to maintain this narrow path of bringing inflation back down, because it's still too high, it's still not back in the band, and according to our current forecasts, it's not really forecast to come back sustainably into the band until 2026. So that's our focus, and I'd have to say at the moment, we still think we're on that path where we're managing to do that without resulting in a large increase in the unemployment rate. We've still got employment growing, which is really positive, and in fact the last few months it's grown quite strongly. So I'd say I'm focusing on, and the board is focusing on, what we can do to bring inflation back down, because as I've said a number of times, that's the most important thing we can do to ease pressures on people, is bring inflation back down.
Thanks, Governor. John Keogh from the Australian Financial Review. Just on the RBA board reforms, now that there's no longer bipartisan support for it, and the Greens have said they will only support it if the Reserve Bank, on the condition that you cut interest rates, do you still think that it's worth pursuing that dual board structure at the moment in this political environment?
So I'm going to stay out of the politics. Obviously, there's legislation that is currently in the Parliament, and there's a bit of debate about that. Interestingly, of the 55 recommendations in the review, only 14 rely on legislation, and admittedly, the dual board structure is part of that. So we've done a lot of work on that, and I have to say my team here at the bank has done a lot of work on how we might set that up. Even if we don't end up with this new governance structure, and again, this is entirely up to the political process, it's not my business. Even if we don't get that, we've still done a lot of great work in how to improve our governance in the Reserve Bank. I should remind people, I think, even though the focus here is interest rates, and this isn't the only thing the Reserve Bank does. The Reserve Bank operates banking for the government, so welfare payments, all those sorts of things go through the Reserve Bank. We operate the critical payment systems in the country. We operate the cash distribution, the wholesale cash distribution system. We have a massive IT operation. All of these things are really important functions of the bank, and at the moment, I'm the sole accountable authority for those. So I think that it would be good for us to get some structure, and I think we can, even if we don't end up with this new dual board structure, some assistance for me in managing that, because I think there's lots of good opportunities to bring experienced non-executives in, and we have some of those on the Reserve Bank Board currently, actually, who can assist with thinking about some of these big operational risks and challenges that the Reserve Bank has on its plate.
Thank you, Governor. Peter Hannam from The Guardian. You mentioned just then that progress on bringing the underlying inflation rate is likely to remain slow in the September quarter. Given that we're not getting the monthly figures until tomorrow, and then there's obviously the September quarter coming out at the end of October, what are the indicators that you're looking at to kind of come to that conclusion? Is it, for instance, data on how much the tax cuts are being spent, or the rate of the closing of the output gap? Can you maybe elaborate? Thanks.
Sure. So let me make one point up front about the monthly inflation indicator. It's quite volatile. It moves around quite a lot because it's only partial. It doesn't capture everything. The one tomorrow will capture some more services than the earlier ones, so that will be important, because what we've seen in most recent inflation figures is that services has been the thing that's been holding inflation up. One of the other important things we've noticed in recent inflation numbers is that building cost inflation has been relatively high as well. So so there are a couple of important things. Having said that, one thing that we are expecting with tomorrow's monthly CPI is that we will expect to see the cost of living relief come into play. And that what that's going to do is that's going to lower energy prices. Fuel prices have also come down. in recent months. So we're expecting, it could well be, on current forecasts, that the inflation rate, the headline inflation rate, in fact comes in 12-month ended below 3%. So that is important because it's reflecting cost of living relief, so it is reflected in the prices that people are seeing, but it's not really reflective of the underlying inflation pulse, which is more what are we observing happening with services, really, which is the crux of the matter. And I think really what we think that reflects is that demand is still a little bit above supply, that gap is still remaining there, and that's what that inflation pressure is reflective of.
Thank you, Governor. Chris Kohler from Channel 9. You mentioned the global picture briefly before, but interest rates are now coming down in the US, Canada, UK, Europe, New Zealand and China. Mm-hmm. A borrower here might be looking at that and saying, what gives? Where's my rate cut? So what do you say to those borrowers?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. So the first point I'd make here is that Australia can set interest rates to its own domestic circumstances. We have a floating exchange rate, so we are able to do that. Economic circumstances here are a little different than they are overseas. So some of the countries you cited, New Zealand, Canada, for example, are seeing quite sharp rises in their unemployment rates. The United States is a little different as well. It's seen inflation come, and some of those countries too are seeing inflation come down further than we are at the moment. So their disinflation process is further advanced than ours is. Same in the United States. The other point I would make is that most of those countries had official interest rates up around over 5%. So in our judgment, we look at how restrictive some of those countries are relative to us. We're restrictive, but we think they're more restrictive than us. And so they're removing some of their restriction because they're seeing disinflation and they're seeing their labour markets respond as well. We're yet to see some of that, but we didn't go up as far as other people. So other countries. So I think that's the explanation I'd give to people. We didn't go up as high. We haven't seen the same deterioration in the labour market some of these countries have seen yet, and we are yet to see some of this inflation that they are. But we're watching for that.
Well, Governor Aaron Patrick from the Nightly, I could just read you a quote, ask your response, please. Former Productivity Commissioner wrote this morning, the Treasurer is coming very close to undermining the independence of the Reserve Bank by hinting that Australia should be following suit as official interest rates are cut in several advanced economies. How are you feeling about your independence? Are you feeling very independent? Are you feeling like there's any pressure on it?
We had a meeting in the last couple of days at which the board were just extremely focused on what we have to do to get inflation down. And that's the focus. So I'm not focused on what other people are saying about me or the board.
Thanks, Governor. Eric Johnston with The Australian. You spoke in your opening comments about sticky inflation. So if we just turn our attention to that, is there still some areas, particularly around wages and other inputs into this sticky inflation, that's concerning you? Or is that sort of starting to pan out as you expected? So what are the parts of the sticky inflation that are making you worried?
I'm reluctant to get into specifics because every time I get into specifics, someone seems to get offended. So I'm not going to get into specifics. But what I would say is that if you look at most around the world, we're not unusual that services inflation is remaining sticky. And in some sense, that's not surprising because the massive goods price inflation that we saw through 2022 and started to come off in 2023, that was partly supply chain issues which were linked with a massive demand response through the pandemic. Once everyone came out of the pandemic, then demand for services went up because people could suddenly consume all these sorts of things that they weren't able to consume. So, and at the same time, the supply of those services found it difficult to respond, and labour was a very good example of where you might all recall that there were grave shortages of labour in many services. Hospitality was a classic one. So I think we're still seeing that there's a carryover from that. The goods price inflation has largely come down. but most countries are still seeing services price inflation elevated. So what we expect is that as demand normalises, and we are seeing from the national accounts that discretionary expenditure is actually declining. People are cutting back on discretionary expenditure, and services is a classic area of that. So we would, that was sort of happening in the first half of this year. That's what we know from the June national accounts. So our forecasts, if they come to be, we will expect to see consumption recover a bit as incomes start to recover and wealth is, of course, rising through housing prices. But we are expecting to see demand for services actually come back more into line with supply of those services over the next year or so. So that's what we're focusing on.
Governor, thank you. Deb Knight from Nine Radio. Economics is often and can be quite heartless with decisions based on numbers rather than on people. You recently said that struggling homeowners might need to sell their homes. Yeah. Do you factor in the human cost? How much of that human cost are you factoring into the decision making that you are making?
So, yeah, thank you for that question, Deb. And I would like to address that point. What I was trying to do when I was talking about that was exactly your point. I wanted people to understand that we do recognise that there are people out there that are having to make some very, very difficult decisions. That was the purpose of the bit in the speech, and if you didn't read it in full, I'd encourage you to read it in full. It was not advice to people. It was really to recognise that we understand that there are some very difficult decisions going on here. You are right. We only have, and I've said this before as well, we only have one instrument. It's the interest rate. And I do understand that distributionally it affects people in different ways. The government has more tools at its disposal, but we only have the one instrument. So really in my comments, I wanted to make that absolutely clear. I wanted people to understand that we do know this. And although we can't do anything about it with our interest rate policies, because we only have one interest rate, we do understand. And in trying to tread this narrow path and maintain the gains in the labour market, one of the most important things for people to be able to continue to meet their expenses and keep their homes is that they have employment. And that's why it's so important for us that we get this balance between bringing inflation down while trying to keep the gains in the labour market. So that's the way we're trying to manage it, but it's blunt, I agree.
Governor Caroline Marcus from Sky News, thank you. Since the last RBA meeting, there's been a significant escalation in the conflict in the Middle East. How do you see that geopolitical volatility affecting the Australian economy?
Look, it's an interesting question. It's very difficult to tell. The way it might impact is if it was a broader escalation and there were implications for energy prices and fuel prices and so on, or perhaps transport costs. We're not seeing that at the moment, but obviously it's a watching brief for, I think, probably everyone around the world. But at the moment we're not seeing it as impacting our economic conditions here.
Thanks, Governor. Kayla Leia from the City Morning Herald. Over the past 2 years, the RBA has downplayed price margin maintenance and price gouging tactics by companies. And given the accusations against Coles and Woolies from the ACCC and the Prime Minister, do you think it's time to revisit that thinking?
So I'm not going to comment on the case, obviously. That's for the ACCC and obviously before the courts. I'd only reiterate what I think I've said before. Back in May 2023, I think we had a box in the Statement on Monetary Policy, and we looked at an aggregate level and said, well, look, profit margins, leave mining to one side, profit margins haven't expanded. And what that was telling us was that as costs were going up, on average, businesses were just passing on the costs, but they weren't any more than passing on the costs. Now, having said that, it's quite possible that some individual firms might have used opportunities of strong demand to more than pass on any increases in costs and increase their profit margins. But at an aggregate level, it wasn't showing up as something that was widespread across the whole economy, that the non-mining sector was expanding its profit margins. We keep an eye on this sort of thing. I don't think we see any evidence that that conclusion has changed, but we keep an eye on that. But at the moment, really the focus is on slowing the growth in demand, which it is slowing, and that is going to mean that it's much more difficult for businesses to pass on costs and to increase margins.
Hi, Governor. Stella Chiu from Reuters. It's curious that this time around you haven't mentioned rate cuts are unlikely in the near term. Is there a reason why? Or like, do you still stand by that assessment based on what you know today?
Yes, didn't I mention it? Well, I'll mention it now. was that the question?
Yeah.
Yes, the board did discuss whether or not the messaging should change. As I said at the beginning, we didn't explicitly consider an interest rate rise because the framing of the discussion was what has changed since last time? And the assessment was not enough, and it was mixed enough for us not to change our view from last time. Having said that, the message clearly from the board is that in the near term it does not see interest rate cuts.
Cécile Lefort from the Financial Review. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Cécile.
With the real interest rates in the US far above those in Australia, about 1.5 percentage points, how confident are you that our interest rates are high enough to bring inflation back sustainably to target? And also, now that the Fed has cut rates by more than some had expected, how do you see that affecting your policy?
So we've talked a lot about, I mentioned earlier that the Fed went up more than we did, as did many other countries. If you look at our sort of judgments about how restrictive our policy is relative to some other countries when they were at their peak interest rates, it's true that we assess that we are restrictive, but we are a bit less restrictive than some of those countries were at their peak. And that was a deliberate strategy to get into restrictive territory, to bring slow growth in demand enough to ultimately bring it back into line with supply while maintaining the gains in the labour market. Some of these other countries now estimate that they have what you'd call a negative output gap. So some of them now estimate that they have demand less than supply, which is why they're seeing their unemployment rates rise quite sharply. So I think the way I would, again, it's part of our strategy, it's the way we've been trying to do this, to maintain those gains in the labour market, but we still need to focus on inflation, and if it looks like inflation is not coming down or it's starting to go back up again, then we'll have to reconsider that strategy if we're restrictive enough. But we judge we are restrictive.
Nadia Daly from the ABC. Governor, if the jobs market is still so strong and inflation is, as you've said, uncomfortably high, why is the economy barely growing?
So if you look at the national accounts, what you would see is that consumption has been very, very sluggish. And part of that is because people are under pressure with interest rates, they're under pressure with inflation, so even people who don't have mortgages are under pressure because the cost of everything is higher. So they're under pressure, and a lot of them are renters, so they're under pressure there as well. So despite the fact that we've got growth in jobs, that's helping people to keep paying those bills, even though prices are higher, rents are higher, and mortgage rates are higher. I want to distinguish again between the concept of levels of demand and growth in demand. So the economy isn't growing, so demand isn't growing very much, but total demand, because of good employment and generally some of the savings, I guess, that that people have. People basically are still demanding more than we can supply. So I just want to make that distinction between growth in demand and levels of demand and supply. So that's why I would say that you are observing per capita consumption declining, as people say, but total demand, because we've got more people in the country, has been holding up. It's still not growing, but it's holding up better than per capita.
Thank you.
Michelle Swati from Bloomberg News. My question is really on your term as governor so far. When you took on the job in 2023, you did raise interest rate once, but it's really been an unchanged kind of scenario, which was also in line with what we were seeing globally. Now the RBA has diverged. Do you think this part now as governor is more challenging for you in terms of both communication but also the risk of a policy error?
It's all challenging, Swati, I have to say, and not just monetary policy. There's been lots of other things going on at the bank as well, which has been equally challenging. On the monetary policy side of things, we didn't go up as far as everyone else. So, and our disinflation, as I said earlier, our disinflation hasn't been as marked as others, and our employment gains have held up. One of the challenges thinking about this is how much signal do we take from overseas? That are we just behind everyone else, or is there something about the fact that we didn't put interest rates up as high as others that means that we're going to diverge in terms of our path? So I wouldn't say that we are diverging in a sense, but we've always been a little bit. We didn't go up as high. So when others are starting to come down and reduce their level of restrictiveness, we haven't had to come down yet because we're not quite as restrictive as everyone else and we're not seeing the same response in our economy. So, yes, it is challenging. It's very uncertain. We highlight this in our media release, the uncertainties on both sides, and that's why we say that we can't rule anything in or out and we're prepared to respond in either direction if it looks like our forecasts, which are, I should highlight, I know everyone focuses on the midpoint of the forecast, but the bands around that are very uncertain. And it could be lower, it could be higher. Inflation could be lower or higher. Unemployment could be lower or higher. So we need to be alert, we need to be looking at the data, and we need to respond when we see things that are maybe not turning out the way we think, in either direction. Sorry? We're always worried about the uncertainties and whether or not we've got it particularly right. It's very uncertain. All I can say is that the board is doing its best to judge what is the right level of restrictiveness to keep it on the narrow path.
Sophia Rodriguez from Central Bank Intel. Fed Chair Powell's speech at Jackson Hole, one line that caught my attention, and he talks about it as a takeaway, and I think it's applicable, it might be applicable to us, is that an important takeaway from recent experience is that anchored inflation expectations reinforced by vigorous central bank action can facilitate disinflation without the need for slack. Now, given that our mandate is almost the same, not same. They have a strict dual mandate. We do not have a strict dual mandate. We've had strong labor market, and I think on some metrics even stronger than the Fed. Then why is it that the RBA not considered have a rigorous monetary policy action? So what gives you? My question is a little long now. Sorry. So back in 2022, August 2022. Dr. Lowe and the RBA board under Dr. Lowe, you know, formulated the strategy that we will go slow on inflation and will protect gains. Since then, so all the board meetings from then to now, how often have you revisited the strategy? And didn't the RBA at any point think that we need to go hard?
Well, we do revisit that strategy, and we revisit it every meeting. We ask the question, do we still think we've got the right level of restrictiveness, and do we still think we're on the narrow path? So yes, we do that at every meeting. You'll recall we adjusted upwards at November last year, which you highlighted, because we felt that we needed to take out a bit more insurance, but we haven't moved since then. And we do think that we are restrictive. We do think that all the signs are consumption. We think inflation is coming down. It's just coming down slowly. Inflation expectations remain anchored. So, yes, that's something we discuss at every meeting. And we still think, as I said, that we're right, we've got the right level of restrictiveness at the moment. But if the data start to suggest to us that one way or the other, we're either on the downside or on the upside, then we will have to respond. Can't rule anything in or out.
But that's only in terms of upside risk. But what about...
No, that's by
side. What about the strategy? What about going hard and getting inflation into the target band, at target, say, N25? So create slack in the economy.
Sophia, that could be an alternative strategy, which is go up really hard, smash the economy, to use a term, and and then come back down, be prepared to come back down very quickly. We've chosen a strategy which is to get into restrictive territory, see if we can bring inflation down by, Powell said it, bringing demand back down to supply without actually moving into a negative output gap. That's what we're trying to do.
Thank you. Nick Fildes from the FT. Just a quick one back to the RBA reforms. The RBA has been used as a bit of a political football in recent days, it feels like, and I'm just wondering what effect that has had on the bank, on the decision making, and whether, given the uncertainty about whether the board split's going to happen, presuming you're preparing for that, whether that's left the bank in a bit of limbo.
So I go back to a comment I made earlier that 55 of the recommendations for the review recommended for the bank. 14 of those were dependent on legislation. Most of them weren't. So actually, the bank is pushing ahead with implementing. And you've seen a lot of stuff on the sort of external side. So you see the 8 meetings a year. You see the press conferences. What you don't see is what we've done internally. And we've done a lot internally. We've completely changed our monetary policy processes. We've changed the board papers. You will have seen we've actually changed the way we do the statement on monetary policy as well. We're working on our culture. We've changed the way we work between groups and departments in the bank. So we've made a lot of internal change with respect to this. Now, where the political process comes out on this, the political process will come out. What we will do is we will work to do what we can internally, whether it's under new legislation or the old legislation, to implement some of the changes if we need to. As I said earlier, it'd be good to get some look at our governance processes, the risk management, all those sorts of things. We're doing all of that anyway. And if it turns out we get new legislation with a new board, then we'll be in a good position. And if we don't, we'll be in a good position. So, I mean, it would be... I've been on the record as saying that I think a governance board with experienced non-executive directors would be helpful for me in terms of managing the bank. I outlined for you earlier all the things the bank does. It's a complex institution. But if we don't get that, then there's other things that we can do without legislation which will allow us to advance that.
Governor Hunsley of Livewire Markets. Given last week's move from the Fed, I'm curious, do you envisage any scenario where the RBA will cut by 50 basis points at some point in this cycle? And if so, what would such a scenario look like?
That sounds awfully like a cry for forward guidance from me. We are not thinking about actual numbers of how we might cut. All I would do is reiterate what I said earlier, which was that we are looking at the data and we're not ruling out we might raise, we're not ruling out we might cut. We think we're in the right spot at the moment. When the time comes, then we'll have a discussion about how urgent in one direction or the other is it that we move and how big those moves will be. So I wouldn't like to speculate right now about the size of any moves, but I just want to again reiterate that we're data-driven. We're watching not only the data in the past, but we've got all of our liaison and business surveys and things which are trying to give us a bit of a window to the future. We use all that information. We're going to be using that to make decisions about whether or not our forecasts look like they're coming in on track, and if they're not, which direction are they not, and how do we need to respond?
Kathleen, as SBS, you have largely covered this already, but to what degree does the RBA take into consideration moves by other central banks globally?
Yeah. As I said earlier, we have a floating exchange rate, so we can set our interest rate policy for domestic conditions, so we can do that. We're obviously interested in what's going on overseas because it might be telling us something about what might happen here ultimately, but it might be telling us about the strength of the global economy and what that might mean for our exports. But ultimately, if other countries are lowering their interest rates and we're not, then that gives a bit of support for our exchange rate. Now, I know that people focus on the cash rate channel as the way monetary policy works in Australia through that cash, but actually the exchange rate's another channel through which policy can work. And if we keep our interest rates where they are and others start lowering, ultimately that gives a bit of support to the exchange rate, which is good for inflation. So it's something we consider, but ultimately we need to focus on setting monetary policy for what we think is best for the Australian economy. And as I said earlier, the challenge for us still is that we haven't seen the same disinflation as they've seen overseas. And ultimately, that is the challenge for the Australian public. That's why people are hurting, is inflation.
Governor, hi, Juliette Sali from AusBiz. You mentioned in the statement labour productivity still only at 2016 levels. Mm. How confident are you that it will pick up enough to disinflate the economy? And if it doesn't, does that therefore mean we could be higher for longer even throughout all of 25?
Mm. So, thank you. So the challenge with productivity is that as you highlight, that's the supply side of the economy. Now, you remember I talked earlier about demand slowing to bring it back in line with supply. Obviously, if supply rises more quickly, then we get to that balance more quickly. So it is important that productivity picks up. It's important it picks up in a long-run sense because productivity growth is the way we grow our living standards. And if productivity isn't growing, obviously that's not great, and it means that wage rises, people can't get real wage rises because they're not being more productive in what they're doing. So it's really important it picks up. A small caution, the productivity numbers have been very, very volatile through the COVID period. So we are, and I think I've described myself ultimately as an optimist on productivity, that it will start to pick up. But at the moment, it's really very weak. So it's important it picks up. I can't do anything about productivity. It's important, obviously, because it does have a bearing on how quickly demand can run without running into inflationary issues. It's important for those reasons, but I can't do anything about it. So hopefully things will start to pick up in productivity terms. One thing I would observe is that a lot of countries around the world, the US is an exception. They've had productivity growth in the last few years. Most countries around the world have not seen productivity growth. So it might be that we've just got to come out of the ripples of the pandemic before we start to see productivity pick up again. But at the moment, it's as we've said, 2016 levels, and we really need some impetus in that to help us with inflation, but help us with our living standards.
Thank you, Governor. I'm Hugo Mathers from Capital Brief. There have been calls from some quarters of the government for the government to step in and intervene on rates. I won't ask for a political comment, but could you share your thinking in the event a move like that happened? Do you see it as a likely risk, and have the board discussed it?
So you're talking about the Section 11, which is part of the Reserve Bank Act, where the government can overrule the Reserve Bank. It's never been used. It's and We've not discussed it being used.
Thank you.
Governor, Matt Bell from The Australian here. Recently, the bank has started to shift the language around the term returning inflation to target to now be sustainably to target. What does sustainably look like to you, Governor?
Yeah. So sustainably means that we're getting there and we're staying there in effect. So I want to highlight, and we did sort of bring this out in the media release, there's two things going on here. There's what we'll see in headline inflation, which is going to be affected by one-off factors and volatile components, and then there's underlying inflation. Over time, the two things will converge to be together, but quarter to quarter, they can diverge. So I think the point I would make is that if tomorrow we get an inflation number which has got a 2 in front of it, so it's back in the band, that doesn't mean that we've got inflation under control. It doesn't mean that inflation is sustainably back within the band. It just means it's back there at the moment. So I think what I want to draw out with sustainably is that we need to see that there's a consistent trend down to the band, and it's going to stay in the band rather than dip in and out. That's the concept, I think. I hope that explains it.
Governor David Taylor, ABC, are you confident that Australia will not enter a recession in the next 12 months?
That's a very good question, David. Our forecasts do not have it entering recession at the moment. But as I've said, if you look at the forecasts, there are very wide bands. The further out you go, the broader the bands of error. Certainly, we are aiming not to end up in recession. That's what we're aiming for. Could I guarantee it? No. You only have to look at the forecast errors to see. I can't guarantee anything. But certainly, that is what we are aiming at.
Michael Stutchbury, Governor. You referred before about the exchange rate being a mechanism through which monetary policy works, particularly as other central banks cut. And I think you said that would be good for inflation if the Australian dollar rises. I think we're reporting that the dollar has risen to a 12-month high of 68, 62 or so, thereabouts after your statement today. Do you think that's a good thing, the dollar's rising, and would you encourage it to rise further as a way to have that transmission of monetary policy operating more clearly?
No, I wouldn't be encouraging. It's an outworking of our interest rate policy that we're aiming at domestic conditions. So I'm not suggesting that we would be encouraging anything with the exchange rate, but as I said, one of the potential impacts of aiming our interest rate policy at the domestic conditions, it might be that one impact is that the exchange rate moves. So I'm not encouraging or discouraging. The only thing I would highlight, though, is that it is ultimately the trade-weighted index, I think, that matters more here rather than just the US dollar. So there's a bit more at play than just the US dollar rate. So thank you. Great. Thanks, everyone.